volunteering with a number of community organisations in South Australia, IT Share doing computer recycling, and The Hut, which is a community
information centre.
Community centre with a network for coloured ministers, and he was chosen as the person to take a recycled computer batch of tech to enable a network within a hospital in Goroka.
Yeah.
So thank you very much for talking today.
Thank you. I'm very, very scared. Okay. I've got a large number of photos that I want to bring up on the screen, and I'm going to talk about all of them in turn. They should be in chronological order if I set them up right. And at the end of that, I've got a lot of time left for questions, or I think I have a lot of time left for questions. And so if there's any part of the trip you want me to talk about specifically, I can go into that in that time. I've got about 17 sets of photos to look at, from everything from the people I was working with through to some of the training we did, through setting up and sending off the equipment, which I think was a fairly important part of the journey. And then at the end, feel free to ask. So the first couple of shots are of the container we're going to use arriving in Adelaide. It was provided by Santos, which is, for the record of people who just watch this and aren't here, Santos is a large oil company that's based in Australia. It's not Monsanto, which is something I had to explain a lot in PNG, so in case there's anyone who doesn't know that distinction. Santos agreed to send all our equipment to Goroka in a 40-foot container, which is a fairly expensive thing to do. So we have a lot of thanks for that. This is the container itself. It's a standard 40-foot, so it's 40 by, I think, 8 by 8. We worked out how many cubic feet that was the other day, and it's quite a lot. This is what was in the container when it arrived in Adelaide. These are the monitors from Santos's Central Australian operations. That's the heat from being in the container in Central Australia at work. So there was about the bottom third... The container's 40 foot. About the bottom third of the container was monitors that looked like this. They had to be unloaded before we could put our stuff back into it, which I think took a morning for Lynn and his work for the old guys. I can't remember exactly. This... I don't know if we ever tested them. We would have gone ugly and cut their cables off and sent them for recycling. This is us setting up the computers. There's a bunch of computers here with the keyboard on top. All the systems we sent for PCs were the same form factor. They're all one type of Compaq Evo, I think. And we tried to have as close to the same components in every system as possible. They all had the same RAM, same hard drives, where possible the same manufacturer, but we can't be all that picky when we're dealing with recycled stuff, so that varied quite a bit. They all ship with keyboard, mouse, and about 1.2 monitors on average. We send extra monitors because they're the thing that's most likely to fall over and die and be really, really missed. If the PC falls over, there's hopefully one you can use somewhere else, or you can fix that. Monitors aren't fixable by someone on the ground without some fairly specialist training. So in our quest to work hard, we shouted everyone a barbecue on the days they came. Let's look from your direction. Ken is on the left and Len is on the right. And that took a bit of getting used to. These guys had both been to PNG, to Goroka specifically, in the past. And the community group they were working with, who you saw in the other photo, and there's more of them, send people to Goroka every couple of months for a variety of reasons. It's quite a diverse group, but it includes nursing and equipment, but not usually computers. What have I got? Those guys cleaning a printer. We at ITShare don't usually send off printers because they're a pain in the butt. They break down a lot, they're hard to maintain, especially if it's dusty, which Goroka turned out to be not too dusty, but we weren't really sure. And toner and ink for them is hard to come by. The older the printer gets, the harder it is. I think they bought that printer, I can't remember. This is a shot I like though. It's the pile of stuff you see on your left is systems that didn't work. Didn't work means anything from it crashed halfway through its install through to the capacitors on the motherboard are blown. Namely, no power flows through it. That's the average size of that pile. So we'd have a stack of computers at the start of every Tuesday and every Thursday, which is the days we had helpers in to help build these systems for Goroka. They would work their way through. Any system that didn't automatically work got put aside. Anything that did work got processed, installed, configured, and put in the trailer ready for sending off to Stirling, where we did the load up. And then on the Wednesdays and the Fridays, I would come in and I'd spend a fair amount of time on those days trying to work my way the whole way through the pile and work out how much of the stuff is salvageable. How much of it is just a bad RAM module causing things to fall over? And how much of it is like the blown caps? There was quite a number of those, unfortunately. The failure rate for these systems, depending on what part of the country they were from, because Santos sent us stuff from all over the place, the failure rate was between 5 and 50%. 50% being the hot, dusty areas, and 5 being the nice, cool offices in Adelaide. There were systems in this pile that we had to physically get in there with a stick to declog the dust before we could blow it out. So that would be, that took a fair bit of time as well, getting the dust out of systems. Moving on to the loadout, more stories of PNG, and over on the other side of the road, at the ITShare shed, these guys, I think it was only the guys doing the testing, tested 180 monitors in about 3 hours, I think. No, we tested more than that. We tested 220 monitors, of which 80 worked, 180 worked, and got sent to PNG. So I said there's 1.2 monitors per system. We sent them with about 30 extra monitors because of the chance of them dying in transit more than anything else. Monitors being packed. I thought this was worth showing because if you look between the monitors, you can see they've put spiral bind folders in all the gaps. This is what the, I can't remember the name, like World Aid Australia or whatever they call themselves at the moment. They changed names 3 times. They call this a really loose pack. They usually get in there with the spiral binds and between the spiral binds and the monitors, and they jam clothes in there. Like kids' clothes, thongs, type of shoes. Anything that's small enough to fit in a gap that they can see gets packed. So even this one, when it arrives at the other end, it's like a brick. There's almost no air in there. We joke about them actually being in a vacuum inside because no air could get in. Systems, really. There's 125 workstations and 23 laptops were sent in that container, along with five servers. Servers are the ones you see on the right, or I think that's what you see on the right, on the bottom. Desks and chairs. We didn't have enough computer stuff to fill a 40-foot container. A 40-foot container doesn't necessarily sound like a lot, but in sheer volume, when you're packing it as tight as these guys pack it, it's really hard to fill. So we decided with World Aid and with these other groups that we were working with that we would use up our space in the container and then they could fill it up with whatever they had that they wanted to send over. These guys send a lot to Goroka as well and to the Eastern Highlands. So of the 40-foot container, IT Share was using less than 15. We used less than a third of the container for our IT stuff, including the monitors. All the PCs were up row deep, just one big square row about that deep in the container, and then there was monitors, and then other. Other includes almost a dozen hospital beds, which I think there's a photo of later. The guy's packing the last of the chairs in, and I'm not sure why, but Pete decided at the last minute they needed more toolkits. The toolkits scattered the whole way through the container, but I think Pete found some right at the end of the packing. So there's these chairs in the foreground, and so they get stacked up inside until there's basically a wall of chairs with a little pile of stuff at the top. The stuff at the top was a sleeping bag, something nice and soft. That got taken out, put under the chairs, and a big toolbox got slotted in on top. So when we opened the container at the other end, this is trying to shut the container. That's my arm on the side. Helpful as always. And two padlocks on the container. And I don't remember who got the keys, but it wasn't me. And those padlocks stay on until it arrives at customs, where I think they open it, go, we can't look in there, and close it again, and then send it on its way to us. And this is the crew who did the packing. The people, particularly of note, who spent more time than others going through, are Phil in the stripy top, Pete sitting right in the front in the middle, Lynn, who's over here next to his two girls, and Dean, who is one in glasses at the back, having a bit of a grin. Those, I think, are the three or four people put a particular effort in. Everyone did, of course. The other five people on the right are from the Lutheran group, who I mentioned earlier, and we even have some of them still coming back to help. But they were really helpful on the days that IT Share was officially open. My packing. I had a reason for including this, which I don't remember. So I'm going to move on. LCA bags. Two years in a row. Pete, who I've just introduced you to, is on the right. John on the left is the guy I was travelling with. I'm trying to remember what I am allowed to say about him. I think I am allowed to say he was former diplomatic corps. So he knew paperwork and he knew visas and all that stuff, which I had absolutely no idea about. And organising flights. We were meant to be in Goroka for 3 weeks. And that time needed to be extended because the container didn't arrive on time. So there was a bit of a delay. And so I got my stay extended by 5 days. which John took care of. And I got handed back my papers of my flight. I went, oh, okay, cool, put them aside. And John picked them up and held them in front of me and said, what do you notice? I went, well, you know, my flights have been fixed, that's good. He went, no, they're booked for last week. And I went, well, what would happen if, you know, I just leave them? He went, oh, you couldn't get out? Because they booked the flights to capacity in the Highlands. You'll even have the situation where you've booked a seat on the plane and they've booked it twice in case one of you doesn't show up and then both of you show up. So it's whoever gets there first, I think. This is the emptiest I've ever seen Adelaide Airport. Admittedly, it's 5 o'clock in the morning, maybe before, 4:45, but that's still the emptiest I've ever seen it. That's inside Jackson Airport in Port Moresby. And all the walls were covered like that. That's this really nice, swishy, spirally stuff, which you're not allowed to take pictures of. I had an armed guard come over and read me the Riot Act about taking photos in the airport. So I decided not to take pictures of the murals, which you can't see just down the other side of the ramp. That's John from a more front-on angle, in front of the dining room of the hotel where we were staying at. And finally, the hospital. It's Groca General Hospital. It's category 3, which means it's in the third largest category of hospital in the country. I think it is the fifth largest hospital in the country. No, it's the third largest, because the only hospitals larger are Mount Hagen, which is a bit further north, and Port Moresby, which has about 10 times as many people living in it. And GGH from a slightly different angle with the name. The hospital was built by the Australian Army in the 70s, I think, not long before they pulled out. And I don't think it's been able to have much renovation since. It has alarm systems and the like built in, as a hospital would do. And none of the glass is left in front of the alarms. And there's usually things living in behind the front panels. So I need another drink. Sorry? How many beds? I don't remember off the top of my head. I can tell you they were running at 110% bed usage, though. That statistic stuck. There's one of the emergency vehicles. They have half a dozen vehicles, I think, all up. Some of them with, like this one, sponsored by the government of Japan, written on the side. While I was there, they deployed that car to go and help a woman who was giving birth, and the car came back without her, and they said, well, what's happened? And the guy who went in the car with a nurse or doctor or whoever he took said she'd already walked to a friend's place and they'd delivered the baby together. So I hadn't bothered waiting for the hospital to come and help out. This is Henry, the guy who would be my main victim during my stay. He's the person that they employed as their IT guy. He's one of the three places that they should have had filled. It's just the hospital hadn't got around to filling the last two places. I'm not sure if they have got around to it yet. Henry had a degree in something, which I don't remember. I don't think he ever told me. From the Port Moresby University. And so he was more familiar, got a degree as a programmer, not as a systems administrator. So he'd spent the time before we arrived familiarising himself with OpenOffice and Ubuntu desktops, and he had a fairly basic but solid understanding of what was going on. But he'd written a database program thing inside OpenOffice's database base. I don't know how hard that is. I haven't tried it. But I'm told that it's quite an impressive thing to do. So there you go. Henry. I think that's all. And Robert. Oops, which way am I going? I'm going the wrong way. I'm hanging my laptop. Come back. Yeah, I'm going to have to. Lucky we're using a stable system. But you weren't running. Up a bit, over to the left, like that. Enough cheek. In front of the hospital again, with Robert in the middle, who was technically my superior, being the hospital's. He's the guy the hospital has employed to oversee the deployment of their network on a 2-year plan or 2-year contract. The guy next to him, who's not me, is Marcel, who was a physio from Europe, who was there, I think, doing his community service. Some of the European countries have enforced either military service or community service at the end of high school, I think. And so he'd come to Goroka to do that rather than do real military stuff. The hospital had custom built, as in built into the rooms, a number of benches for both the server room, which is where this is a picture of, and the training room, which I think I've got a picture of here. Plenty of power, which I was kind of surprised at. There was a dozen double PowerPoints in the training room and I think 8 in the server room. I can only assume that there's enough power behind all those PowerPoints to power it, but the guys who did the wiring came and had a talk because, well, I'll show you later. I'll show you later. In about a dozen slides, I think. The hard drives you see on the desk are not ones that we brought with us. They're ones from people's workstations in Goroka, which they'd been backing up before we arrived to turn their world upside down. One of the drives had been fried while they were backing it up somehow. And when we took the metal cover off the side of the drive, the controlling IC, integrated circuit, had a burn mark from the number one pin to the very centre of the circuit. You could put a pen inside the burn mark through the chip. It was incredible. I replaced the board and the drive still didn't come back to life. So I think the read heads had been cooked as well. I meant that the container had been delayed. The main problem with that was that we'd gone there, we'd sent off all our CDs and resources in the container and planned to arrive with the container. We had a couple of CDs in our carry-on, but we didn't want to have too much in case we got asked, what are you carrying all this stuff for by customs? So what we had to deal with was my laptop, John's laptop, Henry's desktop, and these three systems. And that was what we used for training, only Henry at first, for the first 2 weeks of our stay. They had a separate room for the printer to sit in because people had taken to printing stuff that it was a multifunction. So they've been using the printer as a scanner slash printer and as a fax machine. And it was starting to cost the hospital quite a bit of money. So they moved it into a room with this computer, which was locked unless there was someone from the IT people there to watch you using the device. This was one of... The monitor you see behind this is one of five or six computers that were at the hospital before we arrived. This one's sole purpose in life was to monitor the PABX. Monitors all the daily phone calls. Then there was computers on a couple of the important people's desks, and everything else was done paper filing. The filing system was largely, you come in and you've got something wrong with you. You've broken your wrist. So you come in and you go, my wrist's broken. And they go, okay, well, fill out this patient form. And so you fill it out and they fix you up and you go. And a couple of weeks later, you break something else, your arm. And you come back in and they go, do you have a form with us? And if you can remember, you say, yeah. And if you don't remember, you go, I don't know. And they go, oh, well, never mind, just fill out another form. And there was literally a room with about as much floor space as we've got down here, just covered in desks that are covered in bits of paper. Maybe 30 centimetre deep paper, which is people's hospital records. Robert estimated a couple of years of full-time employment for someone to transfer all the hospital's records into electronic form. Because it also has a storage area, which I think I have photos of, which were also filled with patient records. The container. This was a really exciting moment, so I thought I'd include this photo for you. We'd been in Goroka 2 weeks before the container made it through customs and arrived with us. So there is D talking to the truck driver. And someone, I think the guy with the billum, is going to move his car because that's where we want to put the truck. He did some gardening while he was there. He also almost jackknifed the truck too, so we were all sort of making our nails shorter while we watched him turn the corner. And the unloading. This is reasonably impressive, unloading the container. Because it took us about 10 hours to pack it. That was half a dozen people working on the container and then about a dozen people working support, like testing the monitors, for example. We unloaded the container in 4 hours, which is less time than it took them to unload a 20-footer the year before. So we're not sure what we did, but we managed to go straight through. We didn't have a break. We started about 10 o'clock, I think, when the container arrived, and worked straight through. No, it was 9 till 1. People carrying stuff. This was Claire, who was Dee's daughter, and was there to do some nursing work. And another exciting moment, the back of the container, which meant we're almost ready to actually move on and talk about training. This was one of the guys who'd helped me almost the whole way through the container. He was there for about 3/4 of the way, which was much appreciated. And an empty container. The stuff, the dark patches on the floor, are where there was bottles of stuff that were jammed into places we didn't see them. And so we've taken out all the stuff we can see, but then we go to take down the hospital beds, which I didn't actually include a photo of, but which are just off to the left. and the beds fell down and crushed some bags of stuff. I think it was stuff we didn't really want to lose, like bags of cleaning, what's it called, stuff, substance, and a bolt back through. For some reason, it only arrived with one padlock and one bolt. I'm not sure what was going on there, but we sent it off with only one bolt. And the unloading crew, slightly larger than the loading crew, but then there's the people who just like being in photos and jumped in. I've actually got two of these shots, and the second one is about 50% bigger again. Before, after. That was one room. And I can't remember which room. AJ, after unloading the container, I got introduced to this guy. He's actually wearing my hat and my bag, in case they look familiar from earlier on. But he lived in England. He was educated in England, born in Goroka, had been in the English Navy, British Navy, and was back in Goroka to see his mum, who does... She runs one of the departments at the hospital. And he was really keen to come and play computers with us, basically. So he was much less shy than Henry. The first bloke I showed you, Henry, was really quiet. You'd ask him if he was clear on something and he'd not reply. He'd just sort of go, yeah, maybe. And it was sometimes an effort to work with him. On the other hand, AJ was a problem because we enjoyed getting lost on tangents instead of focusing on, can you write this shell script, please, now? So we're standing in the IT room, and the room you see behind him is where the printer is that I mentioned earlier. Me with not this laptop. I was going to bring that laptop here, but that's us trying to get a network working. Who'd have thought it? Gateway, there's three servers, one's behind Henry, you can't see the other two, and my laptop is the hostile internet, and we're trying to get to the servers. I'm not sure how much of the work we did on these servers they followed, because I do what a lot of sysadmin types do, and I start doing stuff, and I forget to tell people what I'm doing. And so after a bit, I go, oh, did you follow that? And they both go, oh, yeah. I go, cool, and carry on. And then I say, okay, so it's your turn. And then I have to step through it all again because I didn't bother to make sure the first time around that they were understanding what I was trying to tell them. Don't do this to me again. I mentioned I'd come back to the power. We had a slight problem, and the problem is that's water coming up on us. When you stand on those tiles, water comes up and squirts out a bit of dirt, which is what the black ring is for. And we thought, water on the floor, that's a pretty bad thing. Until we went to plug in one of the computers and found out the water wasn't coming through the floor. It was coming out of the air conditioning onto one of the power blocks, then onto the floor. So a quick patch, we put in a plastic polystyrene cup. And went and did some research work at Institute of Medical Research, while we waited for someone to go and make calls and find out why the air conditioning was leaking and why it was leaking onto our power. That was the fastest I've ever seen five computers shut down, ever, being plugged into the blocks on either side of that. the final result was a bit of silicon to try and cover up the fact that it's leaking. Institute of Medical Research. While that was happening, we decided that now is our moment to go and look up some stuff online, because we'd been working through some of the materials I had, which I've brought along, and there was a lot of, so now go and look this up online, or for more information, check out this internet resource. And that's not usually a problem, except the hospital hadn't got around to getting satellite connected, because internet bandwidth in PNG is not cheap. I have a table of prices, but there was from about 10,000 to 50,000 kina a year, which comes out at between five and 25,000 Australian dollars, depending on what type of 256K satellite you're after. The Institute had, I think, dual satellite links and ADSL, which they trunked. So we got some okay speeds through there. I want to detour for a moment away from Goroka and talk about a trip, just for a couple of moments, a trip we did to a village in the Highlands, because it was a bit of a cultural shock, really. Bit of a different experience. This is, I think, the highest point in the Northern Highlands, possibly in PNG, but I don't remember. It's an overpass that connects Goroka to North PNG, and that it was, you're in the clouds. That's what that misty stuff is. It's cloud, it's not mist. And it took me about 5 tries to get a shot where the top of the pole was disappearing into the clouds. And I finally got it and I stopped. And so that, I think, is the highest point, with the highest point disappearing. This is one of the big new houses in the village. It's Roberts, my manager in Goroka. And it's made almost entirely in the traditional way. I think the only thing that's not particularly traditional is the metal grill that they put over the windows in case you get attacked. But the roof is all thatched. The walls are made of, well, you can see in the foreground, sliced up timber. And the inside of the walls and the roof is almost knitted strips of bamboo. I can't remember if I included a shot. No, I didn't. In the apex of, at the front of the house, you can see it, sort of. And I need to mention that's one of Robert's photos, because it's got the red timestamp in the corner, not one I took. The main road into the village. It doesn't go the whole way to the village, because about 10 years ago, there was a lot of fighting between the villages in that area, and the government said, we're just not going to spend money maintaining your road if you're going to spend all your time killing each other. That's almost exactly what happened. So the road has been unmaintained for over 10 years, and that time it's gone from sealed and almost two lanes wide to what you see there, which is less than one lane. The only thing keeping grass off there is cars driving over it, really. And over on the other side is a village, except you can't see it because they're low population density. A village can be half a dozen houses, but that's it. And then there'll be one literally over the next hill. The other side of campus could have another village. They think of themselves as separate. They may fight against each other now and then. They may not see each other all year, but they can be that close. And so the whole of PNG is covered in lots and lots of little villages all over. there's a couple of big population centres that are growing up. That, like Port Moresby is now holding half the country's population in one place. Leigh, the biggest shipping port in Papua New Guinea, Goroka, and other highlands areas. The PNG on the coat of arms, the line is united in separation or something like that, to say we're all separate, we're all different villages, but we're all united together as PNG. This trip happened a couple of weeks after Joel Stanley, for those of you who have seen him, met him, went to the US to work on with the OLPC folks. And so I asked him if I could take his B2, which I think was the second one he got given, to PNG to show to people. And he went, oh, yeah, well, whatever. I'll be working on the real thing. Take it. So I took it with me, and whenever I needed to impress people, I'd reach into the bag and pull out this tiny little laptop and go, oh, look at it. Isn't it good? I know people who work on it. And the Institute of Medical Research, for example, were really interested in it. The hospital IT people were really interested. Not hospital people in general, because they couldn't see much value to it, having just been given a container load of computers. But there was people who I would meet at the Institute while I was doing the research with Henry and AJ, who were really interested. I had a couple of people take me places so they could show their friends the laptop, because I wouldn't let people take it and wander off. And when I moved out of the hotel onto the hospital grounds, I moved into a building, a one building with two halves, so two families in it. So I got half of that building, and this girl's mum, who runs the building and runs, she looks after all the volunteers at the hospital. So I'm living through the wall from the person who manages the volunteers. So I went, I wonder how it goes with people who are younger than its target audience. And so I gave it to her. And it survived. So that was a good thing. And I lent it to her so I could go and, that's my notepad sitting there. I was writing up my notes about what I would say if I was to talk about it, and haven't. She sat there for about an hour and just went through her ABC and turned around and stopped and asked me when she lost her place, pointed to the next key on the keyboard she'd go through. And by the end of it, she knew where all the keys on the keyboard were. She couldn't type or anything like that, but she knew where all the letters of the alphabet were, and she could go through one after the other. I think the next shot is someone else who I managed to find. They both spent a lot of time using the painting program. I think because they could get an automatic result and it wasn't me teaching them how to type. But they sat down together, I think is my next shot, and they worked something out, and then they went and drew it up. I don't have a photo of it because I couldn't photo the screen very well at night for some reason. I think it was the flash was doing something dodgy. Lost my train of thought, sorry. And I thought, for a moment, before we stop, I'd tell you about what it was like to just walk around in Goroka and, you know, a couple of slides in Port Moresby. Because I'm from Australia, where if you're feeling a bit nervous about your neighbours, you might bother to lock the door. You'd shut the window, perhaps. In PNG, in the PNG I saw, this was the standard fence. You have this between you and the street, have this between you and your neighbour. It's 2 metres of metal with three runs of barbed wire out over the fence. And I think I had the next slide, which is small enough grill that you can't fit stones through it to the windows in case they get over the fence or just go through the fence. They also had a guard dog, which is nice. You know, dogs are nice, except it will hurt you badly if it doesn't know you. And so they went in, they said, we'll leave you on the street for a moment. We need to tell the, you know, tell the dog you're coming, we'll bring her out, we'll introduce you, and then we'll let her go again. Well, they brought her out, she was okay with John, she turned to me and she started snarling at me and snapping at me. So they had to go and tie her up, and every time she saw me, she tried to get me. Yeah, too much hanging around with other dogs. That was in Goroka. This is now in Port Moresby. This is a nature strip at the side of the road with barbed wire to keep you off it. I'm not even sure it's working, judging by the big black bits in the middle. But I sort of came to the conclusion that I don't think they sell normal wire in Papua New Guinea. I never, ever saw normal wire. It was only barbed wire, with the exception of the bank shopping complex, which is using razor wire. From memory, the fence to the bottom rail there, is about 2 metres. The rail spikes are another 30 centimetres up. And then there's big loops of razor wire, which you can see how big they are from that. Then you walk around to the gate and you get let through, and a security guard checks you out as you walk in. And you walk around, and I don't know if any of you have seen an ANZ or if your banks work like this, but they usually have the ATM in a little room off to the side so you don't have to stand on the street. You can stand on the street, but it's usually a little room where you go and only one or two people can go in there and get money at any one time. They had a room off the street with a security guy standing out the front, letting you in, and a security guy standing inside, letting you out. And I think there was 4 ATMs in there. So there'd be a maximum of 4 people in the room at any one time. And basically, if you were near the bank, you were under constant supervision, direct supervision, not just video cameras. I think this is my last slide, because this is the bilum. It's a woven string bag that I was given as thanks for the work that I did at the hospital. There's other goodies in there, like there's a kilo of coffee that you can't see just inside the bag. The bags are often woven out of hair, you know, animal fur, that sort of stuff. Except they couldn't give me one of those because they'd have taken it off me at customs as I came through into Australia. So I got the string one, and I actually got 2 because I got mine and I got Peter not being able to come on the trip. So I wound up carrying 2 kilos of coffee, 2 bags and all the extra stuff back through customs. I even declared it in customs because I was a bit worried about carrying 2 kilos of coffee, and both the customs guys just laughed at me and joked at my expense about bringing coffee in Australia, so that was good, in my opinion. So I've gone through my photos that I wanted you to see, and I've got along the documentation and the notes and the training material that I took with me in case you want to ask about that. I've also got all my other photos in case there was something you wanted to see more of or something else relevant. So thanks for listening to that part of the talk, and I hope we can continue on with questions.
What education software did the hospital run on?
Okay. The question was, what was the application software that the hospital will be running on now that they have the computers. At a custom hospital level, I'm not sure. They'll have stuff like webmail, which I started with Squirrel Mail. The servers are all running on Debian. The desktops are all running Ubuntu. A couple of the servers run a LAMP stack, so Apache, MySQL, PHP, that sort of stuff. Robert was looking at almost a dozen open source free software hospital management systems, none of which quite seemed to make the grade. I'm sure we've all had that experience looking for easy to find software. So when I left, they still didn't have any of that sort of stuff installed. The thing that I tried to make sure they had was a couple of running systems, a couple of base running systems, and an understanding of how to install, reinstall, break, and configure the systems once they found out what they wanted. Yeah?
What was the power like in PNG? Do you have brownouts, blackouts, surges?
Okay.
Do you need to have ADRs and voltage regulators always online?
So the question is, what is the power like? Is there lots of brownouts, blackouts, spikes? Do you need extra cleaning on the lines? All those sort of, any of those sort of problems. The power is apparently really, really bad. You'll get a couple of days out of it and it'll die. I seem to recall one of the reasons was they turn all the water and all the power off, not all the power, they turn off not critical systems at night and all the water off at night. So if you get up in the morning too early and try and go and have a shower, there'll be no water because they haven't turned it on yet. And there'll be times where they forget to turn the power on to certain areas of town. And so it'll have gone off and it'll be a day before someone realizes that the power was off. All the IT area had custom had extra filtering on it, but I think that's because it was the IT area. I'm not sure about the rest of the hospital, but all the X-ray areas and other units would have had filtering on their lines as well. Any other questions? Okay, question is, what were the specs of the computers we sent over? The servers were Pentium 3s. They were all Pentium 3s. They were mostly dual CPU compact Presarios, I think. As much RAM as we could jam in them, which was between 512 and a gig. And being servers, they had five disks in front, which were RAID 5. The desktops were all 256 meg of RAM, a 20 gig hard drive, Pentium 4 1.7, CD-ROM, optical of some sort, but typically CD, couple of DVD reader, couple of CD writer. And floppy, standard 100 meg Ethernet. Yep. Yeah, mate?
Is it interesting for updates, for being able to keep an update?
Can you repeat the first part?
How you might keep it for updates, whether that's done separately or...
How do we do updates? The question is, how are they set up to do updates? They're not currently, because they don't have an internet connection, but I talk them through setting up a transparent proxy for values of transparent that you can get with a proxy. So I even left them with working configuration, I think. So the idea is that when they get online, they'll be able to plug the SAT modems into the gateway and plug everything else into the switch, and it'll transparently just cache stuff as it goes through.
What is the training for the curriculum for the end users? What do you teach the end users?
So what did we train the end users and what was the curriculum? I didn't directly go and train the end user, the hospital staff. I spent my entire time working with the IT guys whose pictures you saw to try and give them as much chance as possible as being able to on-train, basically. I did leave them with a lot of offline documentation and instructions. They've got the complete Ingots handbook, templates, pictures, a lot of stuff kindly provided by Robin, who was working with IT-Share at the time. But I never did hands-on training with the user. No.
One thing that we did back home, whenever we trained the IT staff, we had a video camera on all the time on the screen. So when they wanted to refresh themselves, we just replayed back the video thing.
Yeah.
That's how we did it.
That's interesting. Do you need to say something? We're done? I don't know.
Yeah, I'm a bit in the same boat. 324.
We're done?
Yeah.
All right. Sounds like I'm done. So thank you for listening. Thanks for the questions. And if you want to ask me about any of it in more detail, feel free to find me and bail me up in a corner somewhere.